Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review on this 18th of January, 2014, as we discuss the world of sports, NFL Championship Sunday, Patriots, Broncos, Seahawks, 49ers, and of course, my name is Cyril Quinn, taking you until whenever. We have no time limit. We have no time limit until Blog Talk Radio tells us you have to get off the air. That's how big of a show this is. 347-215-6180 is the call number. As always, I can be reached at on Facebook.com/TheRealQuinn, or you can follow me on Twitter at William Gerald. But, of course, I'm not alone, considering it's a championship Sunday. I brought Mr. Robert Sapp to join me to talk about the football games, to talk about this bittersweet Sunday of NFL games. Mr. Sapp, how are you doing this morning? Or this afternoon, I should say.
Yeah, I'm doing very well. That's a great introduction. You know, we got the four best teams in the league playing. So this is kind of a big one.
Yeah, without question. You got the four best teams. You have storylines on top of storylines, and I'm gonna begin myself with just the fact that, and I was looking through this last night. I looked real hard at really the last 30 championship games, conference championship games, trying to see where did this compare to other championship games and matchups. And I'm telling you right now, this Sunday is the best I saw over the last 30 or 35 years in the Super Bowl era. Because the thing is, you would see one great matchup, and then on the other side, you would see a team. There always seemed to be a team that didn't belong in the Final Four. And when I mean didn't belong, I mean that upset a favorite team, or just, you know, was a wild card out of nowhere, especially within the last 20 years. So this is really the first time in a long time where you've had the actual four best teams. And then, you know, to have two teams that hate each other and to have two immortal quarterbacks, it just adds to it. But to me, you can make a case, and I would challenge anybody on this, that this is the best set of championship games that the NFL has ever seen in the Super Bowl era. Super Bowl era, in terms of the merger, 1970. Not the Super Bowl era, but in terms of the NFL merger, which was in 1970. So should definitely be exciting day of football. I'm expecting two classic games. We're going to begin, though, with the first matchup, the 3 o'clock matchup, which will be, of course, New England and Denver at Denver. As you already know, the weather conditions are supposed to be very good, 58 degrees. Shouldn't be, yep. You know, no precipitation, no wind. Should be a very ideal for both quarterbacks. So with that being said, you know, you should expect a lot of scoring as both defenses, let's be honest, both defenses are not very good. Patriots with a suspect front seven, and the Broncos with a beat-up secondary that has three starters sidelined. When you look at Sapp, when you look at this game, Rob, to you, who has a bigger weakness? Is it the Broncos secondary or the Patriots front seven? Which, if you're just a casual observer, which one would you be more concerned about? Which unit?
Wow, that's a great question. I think I'm more concerned about the Patriots front seven. And the reason why is because they, you know, like, again, Belichick, fantastic coach, amazing. We know this, Hall of Famer, Michael Downs, the greatest coach of all time. But you're already missing Vince Wilfork. You're already missing Gerard Mayo. There's somebody else I'm forgetting there. But then you deactivate Spikes. It's just like, you know, like at a certain point in time, you need talented players to do that. And I know they got the boy they were excited about. I'm blanking on his name. That had a big impact in the last game. But that group right there, and, you know, it was cold and everything like that, but that group tore them apart to over 200 yards, way over 200 yards, because Sean Marino had 200 by himself, 220-something by himself. So that's a huge, huge concern. The reason why the defensive backfield of the Broncos don't concern me as much is because I think the Broncos would love a shootout. They would love that. So if the Patriots' game plan is to come in, which I don't think it is to come in and spread them out four wide shotgun, a la how they used to attack the Pittsburgh Steelers, and go at it, I think the Broncos will be all about that, all about that. Please get Peyton Manning the ball as many times as possible, and we'll go up and down the field. So I just think the Patriots' game plan won't be to attack the defensive backfield as much as the Broncos will probably try to soften up that middle of that front seven for the Patriots.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I would be more concerned about the Patriots front seven because even in the blowout against the Colts, there were plays Andrew Luck was making down the field against that secondary against the front seven without pressure. He made mistakes, but he also made some big plays too. And the Colts don't have anywhere near the weapons that the Broncos have. I mean, the Broncos have the best offensive weapons in football. I mean, tight ends, receivers, skill set at the skill positions, they absolutely have the best in all of football right now. And, you know, if you're the Patriots, you have to find a way through disguise, through blitzing, you have to find a way to get some pressure on Peyton Manning. Now, in the last, you know, you had to. It's just like you cannot sit back there. He cannot get into a rhythm to start off this game to where he's comfortable. He can't feel comfortable because the matchup, even though the Patriots have some good players in the secondary, some pretty good players in the secondary. They don't have a Seattle Seahawks type secondary that can just shut you down and are going to intimidate and jam receivers, things of that nature. They need a pass rush, so I'd definitely be more concerned about the Patriot front seven than I would the Broncos secondary. How about the fact when you look back at the game last week with San Diego and Denver, does it concern you how, in terms of from a Denver perspective, does it concern you how easily San Diego was able to move the ball in that fourth quarter, moving on into how they finished that game, basically limped home, moving on into this championship?
No, it doesn't concern me, just because I think the dynamics are completely different from that game to the game we're going to see. So I don't know if you can necessarily draw the comparisons in terms of San Diego's a divisional foe. Their offensive coordinator is now their head coach. So it was like there are a lot of nuanced pieces that were going on there that probably allowed San Diego to be a little bit more effective than, say, let's say it was Denver and the Colts. You know, that would have taken on its own kind of demeanor. And I think Denver Patriots, particularly Peyton Manning Patriots, has a whole different meaning to it. So I think the Patriots are going to be able to move the ball. Like, that's not – like, I don't think that's going to be a problem at all. Like, so I'm not trying to make it like, oh, that defensive backfield is not because it is. But I do think the Patriots are going to try to run at least half as much as they pass. So time of possession is going to be the bigger key. And then can the Broncos get the Patriots off the field in third down scenarios?
With that being, that's a good segue to my next question. If you're Denver, you had the beat up secondary, but yet the Patriots all of a sudden have turned into a run oriented football team within the last couple of weeks, and really within the last part of the season. Do you expect to see a lot of eight in the box, one on one coverage to slow down the Patriot running game by the Broncos?
I mean,
regardless of.
I saw this statistic late last night on SportsCenter, and I think I'm right on this, against a Jack Del Rio coach defense. Tom Brady is something and 0, 8-0, 10-0, and has 17 touchdowns to 0 interceptions. So I say that to say it's going to be tough sledding for the Broncos defense, right? Like if they're relying on their defense to win this game, they're not going to win this game. So
right.
I think, you know, it's going to be timely stops, you know, hopefully a turnover too for the defense. It's going to be timely because the Patriots are going to be able to move. No, they can't just load up. So I say that to say, no, they can't just load up 8-9 in the box because Brady will destroy them in the second. It'll destroy them.
Here's the thing, though. Here's the thing, and it's kind of, I hear what you're saying in terms of basically almost a pick your poison type thing. But if I'm the Broncos, right now, I'm looking at, as great as Brady is, and he's still Tom Brady, I'm looking at that running game as being a more powerful weapon than what they can do with their receivers, Because if I'm the Broncos, like you said, I want as many offensive possessions as possible. And if they are allowed to run the ball down your throat, then the Patriots will just shorten up the game and keep 8 men off the field.
Here's what I say, like on the flip side, right? Like we know Belichick is going to try to take away your best weapon. That's when
right.
he's most effective. What you hope for is that the Broncos come in with a sophisticated defensive game plan, right? Like these quarterbacks too good to come in with a fixed game plan. Meaning, we're going to stop the run. Like, that's too fixed of a game plan to come in with Brady. Even though we assume Tlaib is going to be on Demaryius Thomas, even that is too fixed because there's no one huge weapon that Peyton Manning will focus on. So even Belichick's take away your best is probably centered around Peyton Manning more so than taking away one of his individual receivers. So these quarterbacks are too good to come in with something so fixed or something so static as we're going to stop the run, because they will make the adjustments really quickly and then start beating you over the head with those adjustments. So stopping the run definitely has to be a part of their game plan. I probably think and agree with you more in both cases on both sides. The game plan needs to be we have to get pressure on these quarterbacks.
Right.
That's going
right.
to be those turnovers are going to be the, you know, the name of the game, so to speak.
15th time, this will be the 15th time all time that Brady and Manning have met postseason, regular season. Brady in the postseason, and Brady 10-4 lifetime against Peyton Manning, 2-1 the postseason, though since I think since 2006 or 2007, it's been even. I think 4-4, and since that championship game 2006, it's been even as far as the record goes. You look at the numbers on the playoff. You look at the numbers against each other. Brady, 26 touchdowns, 26 12 interceptions. Manning, 29 touchdowns, but 20 interceptions, and that has been the difference. Manning has been prone to making more mistakes going against Tom Brady than Brady has, of course, against him. Very interesting with these two, obviously two of the all-time greats. It's gotten so bad with Manning that people actually have me defending Peyton Manning and his legacy, and I'm going to explain to you why. You know, earlier this season, how I was critical of Manning in terms of his postseason play, in terms of how he played postseason versus the regular season, that I was critical of it, didn't understand why his play had dropped off so much. But it has gotten to a point to where people are criticizing him on a level to where you would have thought that he had never won a Super Bowl or been to another one.
Yeah.
You know, it's gotten that bad. And I'm like, the worst thing you can say about Peyton Manning right now is that he's not the greatest quarterback of all time. That's the worst thing you can say about him. Like, Peyton Manning, exactly. Peyton Manning, in all my years, I'm watching football 27 years, regular season-wise, Peyton Manning is the most consistent football player I've ever seen, week in and week out. Like, the level he's played at, like, from the start of his career up until this point, he's going to win his fifth MVP. He's going to have five MVPs. So, you know, you can go, again, he's had a Alex Rodriguez-type career, dominant regular season, hasn't come up big in the postseason.
No, don't do that. Say somebody else but Alex Rodriguez. Anybody else. Say somebody else. Don't you dare put Peyton Manning and Alex Rodriguez in the same sentence. Don't do it.
Absolutely. Look at Alex Rodriguez.
You were the worst. Don't do that. How about a Greg Maddux type career? You could easily say Greg Maddux. He's going into the Hall of Fame. How dare you put A-Rod into this conversation?
No, this is my point about A-Rod. This is my point about A-Rod. Put all the nonsense and all the dumb stuff A-Rod's done.
You can't put all the nonsense and dumb stuff
on the field
with A-Rod. I think you said that on purpose to get me upset. I was fine this morning. Calm, cool. I was agreeing with everything that you said. I think you did that to set me off.
Here's my point.
A-Rod.
He gets criticized. I mean, he's gotten to a point to where he's gotten, like, people have almost forgotten that he does have this Super Bowl win and Super Bowl appearance. And the fact that here's the thing about Manning versus Brady. And we can go back. I would take Brady over Manning because Brady has a better balance of numbers and coming up big in the postseason. But understand this. Manning has not, like, in the games Manning has lost in the playoffs, his team has had little room for error. Like, if he doesn't play well, they cannot win.
Right. Yeah.
Brady Brady, on the other hand, has had playoff games where his team has won in spite of him, being great. Like he's been average. Like the Super Bowl,
that first Super Bowl run. Brady. I think that is absolutely correct.
Todd lost about it in that Super Bowl game. And again, he wasn't making big the mistake that Manny was made. But he was not. He wasn't in that first Super Bowl run. He wasn't putting up these ridiculous numbers and going. You know, the team they had great. I mean, it's obviously a great balance of with not making mistakes and the defense. The defense was dominant at that point. So, but Manny has not had the luxury. The problem with Manny, as far as the postseason goes, is drop off has been so dramatic between his regular season and season that people just are confused. Because the bottom line is you go through all the great quarterbacks of all time, okay, with the exception of Montana, Elway, and Bart Starr and Unitas, all their postseason numbers are not going to be as good because the level of competition is much higher.
Right, goes up.
Even Brett Favre is Brett Favre's playoff record is only 13-11.
How about to say Brett Favre? I think Brett Favre's Brett Favre is so much before we talk about A-Rod. Brett Favre is the one that kind of came to my mind in mirroring Peyton Manning's career in terms of comparable success in regular season versus what it looks like in the postseason and completely like having like throwing the killer interceptions. I think the point is this though, and I've thought about this a lot with these two over the years because for a variety of different reasons, I have just analyzed Manning and Brady for this entire time. So in terms of like. Picture in my head of great quarterbacks through my lifetime, these two will probably be the ones that come up in my head because as I was coming into an adult sports conscious and could really reasonably look at things, these have always been the two best at the head in some type of ways. Brett Favre, was there, but I was a little bit younger. So anyways, I say all that to say, if you look at it and you track their career path, and we already started doing this in the first one, the Patriots, and this is what I've always said because I remember those teams very well, the Patriots were so successful when they were a balanced team. As a matter of fact, that's when they won those three Super Bowls. Now, when you win three Super Bowls in your first four seasons, everything after that is going to be great.
I'm not taking
anything away from Tom Brady, but he basically, his career was set unless he suffered a devastating injury that took him out before he had a chance to put up the longevity numbers, there was no stopping that train to the Hall of Fame. So his career is set. But I will say Brady has seen what the pressure is like, and this is the point that Peyton Manning has had since day one, right? Like everything is on you.
Right.
He has done a tremendous job in the regular season, putting up fantastic numbers. This is Brady now.
Yep.
And in the postseason, a much more mixed reaction and no Super Bowl wins.
Yep. So that's a great point. That's a great point.
Offensive pressure, you know, I heard the comment, you know, where LeBron James was like, man, I really am jealous of Kevin Durant.
You did it to me.
Yeah.
Really? The jealous? The first 7 years of your career, you were taking all the shots. And you're shot on, LeBron.
So I say that to say, I'm sure Manning, when he looks back on the early part of Brady's career versus the other part of – versus the latter part – I mean, versus the early part of his career, I'm sure he was saying, man, you know, that's luxurious to be able to rely on a defense, you know, have a stud running game, particularly the Corey Dillon years. People don't remember that. Corey Dillon was a 1,600-yard back.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, so particularly during the Corey Dillon years, to have a stud running game to kind of like go along with what you have to do, and then kind of more manage the game until you needed to win the game. Peyton Manning, majority of his career, he is the offense. He's the everything. He's the offensive system. He's the offensive coordinator. He's the, you know, he's a computer. He's a robot out there. So there's something to be said about that.
And to be fair about it, and to be also be fair about it, Peyton Manning not only has been the offense, he's been the defense, because in a way, it's like, Peyton, could you help us get out to a big lead so we can have an effective pass rush?
Yeah, exactly.
We want to be winning, but could we be winning by double digits so Freeney could, you know, pin his ears back and kill the quarterback? Or could you keep our defense off the field? we don't want to be on the field too long. We're undersized, you know, which their defenses have been for the majority of his career, especially in Indianapolis when they had those small, fast defenses that could rush a passer but could not stay on the field for any amount of time because the other team's offensive would just physically manhandle them with running the football. No, yeah, Brady. You know, you look at Manning's stats in the playoffs. There hasn't been one game where he has played well and they've won. There hasn't been one game that he's played well and they have won. It's been all, and even tomorrow, it's going to be all on him to help lead them to the Super Bowl. Now, you mentioned about the Patriots and about the early years.
I will say, though, really quickly, that 2006 year, I recently went back and watched like the the Colts Super Bowl run, and that was
right. That
year, coincidentally, when their defense went from like couldn't stop anybody in the running game to no one could get 30 yards on them. It was inexplicable.
It was crazy.
And in those games, Manning wasn't really good. Like, I went back, and I was like, man, I forgot how, like, he wasn't that good in the Kansas City game. He wasn't that good in the Baltimore Ravens game.
Right,
of course, the epic comeback versus the Patriots.
The Baltimore-Kansas City game was more about their running game and their defense than it was about him.
Yeah.
So those are the two.
Yeah.
Those would be the exceptions to where they won games where he was not great. Those would be the two.
And that's
because that
defense had a superhuman effort. One that's still one of the great, you know, mysteries of all time.
I've never figured that out because they couldn't stop anybody in the regular season. Bob Sanders was hurt.
They couldn't stop anybody.
Nobody from running the ball. They couldn't stop nobody
from
running. Everybody ran the ball on them that year. Even with their record, everybody ran the ball on them that year. And then all of a sudden you have running teams like Kansas City or like Baltimore was at the time who can't run the ball. I'm like, I've never seen anything. It was just one of those things. It was his turn. It was his turn to win the Super Bowl that particular year. But getting back to the Patriots, this Patriot team actually looks closer, much closer to the teams that won Super Bowls than we've seen in the Patriots in the last 10 years. Because no big names, Julian Edelman, you know, no names coming from nowhere off the street, catching passes, you know.
I thought Austin Collie was not to be facetious, but I see him get some crushed hits, concussions. I thought he was out of the league for sure.
Well, he was out of the league too, yeah. They got no name
players. They cut him, re-sign him.
times they could have even re-signed him. So they got these you know, a cast of no-name players. You got Brady not putting up spectacular offensive numbers. You got a defense that's just finding a way to make plays. You know, you got they're not as talented as they were at the beginning. They have a Ty Law, Lord Malloy. They don't have those kind of players on defense. But it's funny how that works out that they've had
Brewski, McGinnis.
You're right, Brewski, McGinnis. You know, that couple of people on that front seven that they had. But it's funny how that's
worked. Seymour.
Seymour. Exactly. Those kind of players. But it's funny how that formula has worked out when, you know, we've seen them get eliminated by Baltimore and the Jets in the last couple of years with all this offense and all this offense, no defense, and no running game. It's been all, you know, Tom Brady throwing the ball 3 times.
Yep.
So they've gotten back. Maybe, I don't know if this is by design or just the fact that their personnel.
This is necessity. They definitely need to come into this season thinking we're going to be a run-first team.
No. Absolutely not. They signed Amendola. So, no, they didn't go out there thinking that we're going to, you know, at times we're going to run. No, first of all, they didn't go out there thinking LeGarrette Blount was going to be the number one back.
Right, exactly.
This is a product of Ridley's fumbles. And I'm surprised that Ridley – was on the field. Like, he actually played
me
well
too.
In that last – I was sort of shocked to see him on the field. I think he might have been shocked.
Yeah.
But they've definitely gone back to what they were at the beginning of the Belichick – Belichick-Brady era. Ironically,
and Shane Vereen is Danny Woodhead 2.0. Like he's a beast. Like he's if he stays healthy, he's an offensive problem. Like he's a scat back. You know, I've been impressed with him.
Let's be honest. You got Vereen, Blount, Edelman, those are the 3 guys that Brady trusts right now offensively. Those 3 guys. And early in his career, Brady had, you know, Troy Brown, who he trusted, Deion Branch. I'm leaving out somebody.
Watson. Caldwell was there. Yeah, Ben Watson was his tight end.
Right. Not big names, but people he trusted.
Right, exactly.
Randy Moss, of course, was just Randy Moss, you know. But
That's when they started doing the high flying stuff. When Randy Moss and Wes Welker that got there, that was the end of the run first philosophy. It's time to throw that ball around.
That's when they made the proverbial shift of philosophies.
Yeah.
Brady all is Denver 5-6, and Manning all time is New England, of course, 7-14. So, ironically, 2 of the winningest quarterbacks of all time have losing records against the teams that they were facing on Sunday. And I found that very curious. Brady has struggled against the Broncos in his career. You look at it, there's only 3 teams that he had. He had losing records of 500 against 6-6 against Dolph. You can't even count this one. 1-2 against Carolina, which really is not enough of a body of work. But 5-6 against Denver. So Denver and Miami have given Brady the most trouble over the course of his NFL career, which has included, you got to talk about a guy who has a winning percentage of over 700. And has that home winning percentage that's close to 800. I mean, his home winning percentage is, I think, the best of all time. So, and
I was going to say, no Buffalo Bills on that list? You mean we haven't given Brady trouble? No?
I think there would
no trouble.
I think he's 21 against the Buffalo Bills.
We've barely been on the field when the Patriots have gotten there. Anyway, sorry.
Get the Buffalo comment.
Yeah.
So, of course, Manning, 7-14 against New England, and Belichick has just always found a way to just confuse Manning. And a lot of it has been, too, I'll think about, too, not only with Belichick confusing him, but a lot of it has been the Peyton Manning that we don't, that we haven't, that we're not seeing right now. A lot of it has been his impatience.
Right.
You know, his ability. Like right now, Peyton Manning he will check down. He will run LeSean Moreno to death. He has no problem with doing that. So if you want to drop two safeties back, you know, way back 50 yards, Peyton Manning, LeSean Moreno will have 200 yards rushing. Because Peyton Manning has no problem doing that. But for the majority of his career, especially in those early days, Peyton Manning check down was like a four-letter word. It wasn't happening.
I mean, you think about it, this dude in the early part of his career had Marshall Faulk and Edgerrin James. Like, those are his first two running backs that he had with him. But he's such an offensive force. You're absolutely right. It was about pushing that ball down the field.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he just – and not 5 to 10 yards at a time. He wanted to go 30, 40, 50 yards. The mad bomber. I mean, he wanted to go down the field all the time. I mean, you have Marvin Harrison and some of the guys, Reggie Wayne, he's had some great receivers. So, I mean, who can blame him from that standpoint? But it really has gotten exposed against Belichick, who just ate that up. Like, okay, sure, go ahead. So that you know. But now the new Peyton Manning – you know, the new Peyton Manning, not the new Peyton Manning, but the Peyton Manning of the last 3 or 4 years has been.
Well, since he got to Denver.
Yeah, since he got to Denver, yes,
yeah.
Exactly. Since he got
to Denver. The Denver Peyton Manning,
absolutely. Speaking of Manning, report came out, and I found it very curious, came out last week about, you know, he'll return for 2015 if he passes a physical come March by his neck.
Yeah, I saw that. Mm-hmm.
So that was, you know, who knows? I mean, I'm not saying this is going to be his last game if they lose, but when you hear that coming up, like right now,
it's very
telling, very interesting. Have you been having neck problems that we haven't known about? You know, stuff starts to surface when somebody starts thinking that when something like that just comes out of the blue. Because they could have said that could have came out easily after the Super Bowl or after his season was over.
Yep. No, I think it's part. I mean, like we know Peyton Manning is super calculated, right? Like, but I think he saw what Lewis did last year, and I mean, I think it's the Broncos trying to find an edge. I mean, he absolutely is going to go through a neck tear, you know, absolutely. But he's also already been on record saying he wants to come back next year. Peyton Manning, we also know this is a glory hog, right? He wants all of those records. So if he can get them, he's going to definitely go after them.
Yeah.
So,
yes.
He just came off his greatest quarterback season ever. So there's no way that Peyton Manning is going to just hang it up, even if he wins the Super Bowl, if he's physically able. So
right.
I think their part, like, that is something that's absolutely true, but that's something that they can try to use to maybe motivate the team just a little bit. Like, don't take this for granted. He just had his greatest season, absolutely. But he can be gone next year. We need to get this thing done now. So, try to play like one of those mentally. I mean, he can't go as far as Ray Lewis and say, this is my last year, I'm retiring, because he doesn't want to retire. He doesn't want this to be his last year.
No,
but he can definitely, and the organization can definitely put it out there, like, you know, don't assume we'll be back here again next year. Don't assume that. We got to go and get it now.
Yes, absolutely. Before we get to
it's calculated.
Do you think that this is Tom Brady, that this has been Tom, considering injuries, considering the lack of personnel, do you think that this has been Tom Brady's best year?
I've heard that a lot. I mean, here's the thing. Like, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning are both on a level of greatness where they're, like, NFL players, commentators get giddy talking about them, right? Like,
right.
I remember when Ray Lewis first stepped in the studio for ESPN and Tom, why am I blanking on his name?
Brady.
What's his name?
Brady.
NFL.
Oh, Tom Jackson. Oh, Tom Jackson.
Yeah. Tom Jackson was a groupie. He was just a groupie to Ray Lewis. He was just giggling and laughing at all his comments and like, yes, Ray. So, yes, so that's so true, Ray. You know, and it's just like, so everybody who's making these comments just love Brady, love the excellence, going like, this is the most fantastic coaching job and everything like that. The AFC was weak this year. Just weak.
Hey, that's a very important point.
Yes. The AFC was just
historically
weak.
Historically bad.
Yeah.
Because in the last 15, 20 years.
Yeah. And they play in just a pathetic division. Like, no, like, of course, but we're terrified of them, Buffalo, being the Jets. They're still trying to convince themselves that a quarterback who threw 20 interceptions to 11 touchdowns or whatever it was is their starting quarterback. So that's as far as that goes. And then Miami, you know, they can't get it right. They couldn't figure themselves out in enough time to even remotely propose, you know, to put a challenge out there.
Without the offensive actions, without the Cognito Martin, without that.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Brady and Belichick and the Patriots, the best of them, and they've been this way for forever, is that they will out-execute you. They will practice. They will go over situations. They will have it as a Rolodex in their mind and out-execute you. Now, he did a fantastic job of that this year, but that's always been a part of their MO. So that's no different from any other year. I will say the most damning thing that I would put to the Patriots is I expected the running game adjustment so earlier in the season. Like, they're getting ballyhooed for it now, but it took them a while to get it in their head to run the ball. I thought that adjustment was obvious and that it would happen almost instantly, but Brady spent the first 6, 7, 8 games off of McDaniels, Belichick, all of them, trying to make Aaron Dobson and Kimbrell Tompkins,
who
you don't even hear about anymore, trying to make them into, you know, stud receivers and all these things. Exactly. You know, he spent the whole first half of the season trying to make that happen. Now, the AFC is so weak, the Patriots are so technically proficient that they were able to eke out those games. But that adjustment that people are talking about right now didn't come until much later in the season. So, fantastic coaching job, absolutely fantastic coaching job. You put that team with the majority of the coaches, that is like 6-10. Easily,
if not.
Like, they didn't know. So, fantastic coaching job, but best coaching job ever, please stop it. That first Super Bowl run was amazing, and then those back-to-back Super Bowls.
For Tom Brady, his last, to me, his best season was not even the 2007 season. That was statistically his best season. His best season was his last MVP season, 2011, to me. That was his best season because they didn't have quite the talent there other than Walker. And I know the tight ends were good, but I know the tight ends were very good at that point. But that, to me, that was his last MVP season was his best season. But like you said,
them to stop that juggernaut that was the Rams offense, and believe me, the Rams, nobody had seen anything like that before in history.
That was
the best coaching job I have seen.
Without question. Yeah, between him and
every other Super Bowl, they've been the favorites. you know, particularly the last two, you know, think about going up against the Giants' losses. They, you know, one of them,
that's
they were the overwhelming favorites.
That's the only Super Bowl they haven't been favored with the Rams Super Bowl. That's the only Super Bowl they have not been favored. They've been favored in the other four.
Yeah.
That's the only Super Bowl
they've
been
underdog. Yep.
And they should have been underdog. The Rams are better.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The Rams are clearly a better team. But that coaching job was out. Like, that was one of the great coaching jobs you'll ever see in a Super Bowl game to take apart that Ram offense at their absolute best, considering what the Ram offense has done. So, no, it's not, you know, like you said, first of all, it can't
you're
be
starting at that point in time, your starting franchise quarterback goes down.
Was hurt. Yes. We didn't know
backup comes
we didn't
in.
Know.
No, of course
not. Tom Brady was.
Backup comes in, and then people even forget this. Tom Brady went down in the playoffs.
Yes.
Drew Bledsoe comes in, throws the winning TD, and then you still have the guts and the moxie and the thought process of, no, you go back to the bench. That was a masterful year. And I remember all of those games just because, nobody knew about the Patriots at that point in time, you know. And I remember all those games and how they won. It was just like, it was magic. They were just manufacturing wins out of nowhere. It was just magic. So anyway, that would be that. I think people forget that, you know, prisoner of the moment, of course, 24-hour news cycle, gotta say a lot. That 2000-2001 season, that was the best job Belichick has ever done.
And let's be fair about it. You just brought it up. You can't. It was not great coaching when you were trying to make Kendrell Tompkins and Aaron Dobson, Randy Moss, and Wes Welker. That's not great coaching.
Yeah.
And remember this is how long the NFL season is. Cause we forget this based on their recent success. People were saying that Brady had fallen off. That's how bad Brady looked the first 6 weeks of the season. Like, is Brady done? I'm saying to myself, calm down. Let's calm down here. But he was not playing well the first couple months of the season. Brady was not playing well. Like,
Oh boy, do I know.
He did not. Yes, you know him.
He was my fantasy quarterback. Boy, do I know.
He was not playing well at all. He's not playing well at all. So it took them the majority of the season to shift towards a running game and to realize that Aaron Hernandez was locked up and Gronkowski was going to be injury prone. So it took them a long time to get past themselves, to fight themselves as far as that game plan was going to go. So let's calm down about that. Now, you know, so you can't – best coaching job, no. Best year Tom Brady has had, no. Or no on both of those points. So – before we shift to the San Francisco Seattle game, what is your prediction for Denver's New England?
Okay. All right. So I'm going to go along for a little bit. Bear with me because there's something I've been thinking about as we've been talking about this. I wonder if we go back and just start like tracking, and probably I would say you don't need to go back hugely because this wasn't an issue. You know, past the free agency era. But I wonder what the Super Bowl, winning record of quarterbacks after they receive their big money contracts. Because I think what happens, and I was going through it mentally in my head, I think what happens is, and even in Brady's case where he's like, yeah, I'm going to take a little bit lesser team, you still have to invest so much on your quarterback, which then in turn means you have to invest so heavily on your offense that it depletes your defense. But we also know that you can't win in this league without an elite quarterback.
Right.
And so I think there's like a gift and a curse like aspect there. That doesn't necessarily apply to this game. That applies probably when we talk about who's going to win the Super Bowl.
Right.
But I think it's an interesting concept. In contrast, you look at these two teams versus the two teams that we're going to be talking about and, where a lot of their – because they don't have to pay their quarterback an exorbitant amount of money, where
it's
they can
luxury.
Actually put their money there. So, anyways, I think that's going to be – I'm playing chess a little bit here thinking about my Super Bowl prediction. But as far as this game goes, I thought about this long and hard. I initially was like, Denver's definitely going to lose this game.
Right.
I saw the weather report, saw the perfect conditions, saw all of that, and that's kind of like moved me more towards the middle. Now, the not the sad state of affairs, but because I've seen it so often, there will be moments in this game where Belichick will present something to Manning that confuses him. It's what does Manning do at that moment? Does he take the sack or does he throw the crucial interception? Does he check from the run into the pass and then throw the crucial interception? That will be the story of this game, more so than the other side of the Patriots defense versus the – no, I mean the Patriots offense versus the Broncos defense. It's going to be Belichick versus Manning chess match. That's going to, I believe, decide this game. So with that being said, the Broncos, the only reason this game is – it's a sad state of affairs that this game, in my mind, is so close because the Broncos are so overwhelmingly more talented than the Patriots, particularly on offense. But it's that history of Belichick and Manning that pulls it back to the middle. So I say all that to say I have the Patriots – in a close, tight game, something like, 31-28, hopefully overtime. I feel like this game gives us the best chance at an overtime playoff game. But I'll go Patriots by 31-28.
I agree. I like the Patriots by, well, not by three, but the number I had in my head was 31-27. So it just basically the same. But I think that the Belichick, man, the Belichick Manning thing, I think just he just, has his number. I think that he just has his number. And I think that he will induce Manning. Manning will make some big plays, and there'll be big plays all over the place on both sides. But Manning will make that critical mistake.
Yep.
That one mistake that changes the game. And I think that Brady will not make that mistake. So I definitely think about that. I think that will be the difference. I think the conditions are fine. The conditions, I think the conditions are there to help both quarterbacks, especially more important for Denver. And I wonder too about the conditions. I wonder if that doesn't, trick Denver, if that doesn't fool Denver into doing something that they probed it, into just throwing the ball all over the place instead of running with Nashawn Moreno. Does that definitely influence what they did against San Diego last week? It definitely influenced what they did against New England the first time as far as running the ball. The conditions were windy, so let's not throw the ball. So I wonder if that will hurt them, that the conditions are perfect and they get away from running the ball from Nashawn Moreno as much as they should. Because they should, even the fact that Manning, I still think they need some balance too against the Patriots. I don't think you want to give Belichick a steady diet of just throwing the ball. I think that'd be very dangerous for them.
Absolutely.
With that said, to me, it's a toss up. It is a toss up with Denver having a slight edge to the home field. But I like how the Patriots. I like this Patriot team as far as the karma that they have. These no names that they have. Like I said earlier, I like the Patriots have. These look like the Patriots of old, Patriots 1.0, the Patriots light, because they're not as talented, but in terms of winning with intangibles, Brady being clutch, these no-names out of nowhere, they got a great field goal. Both of them have great field goal kickers, so that won't be an issue, I don't feel.
Type of Patriots team that drove me crazy. This is the type of Patriots team I remember. This is the type of Patriots team that drove me crazy winning at the very last moment, just doing the necessary things to win, not winning, not blowing people out by 34, 35 points. Those Patriots I didn't really recognize. This is what I remember in the championship in that dynasty span. This type of Patriots right here. This type of Patriots worries me way more than
Absolutely.
The fling it all over the field and everything like that. These Patriots are probably when they're at their most dangerous.
Yes. Now we shift the course to the NFC Championship in a battle of two young quarterbacks who are trying to make their mark in Kaepernick and Russell Wilson. You have two head coaches who, I don't care what they say, they hate each other. They can try to be politically correct as all that they want, but they hate each other. And you have two.
Particularly Harbaugh can't stand Carroll.
Carroll's
a little bit more indifferent because he was the one on top, but Harbaugh can't. Woo. Harbaugh can't stand Pete Carroll.
No, he can't. No, Harbaugh hates Carroll. It's without question. He hates him. And last year in that last regular season game, or last time they met in the regular season, in the last season, it was 42-13. There were reports that Richard Sherman told Pete Carroll to run up the score.
Yeah.
So and you also have the fact that Richard Sherman played for Jim Harbaugh. And allegedly, you know, Sherman says
Harbaugh was bad-mouthing him.
He's bad-mouthing him. Him and his father called Harbaugh a bully, said that Harbaugh almost ruined his career by almost ruining his career. Luckily, he switched to cornerback and told him he wasn't this particular type of player, he's going to move so there's some bad, there's a lot of bad blood all around.
Yeah.
But when you look at these two teams, the first thing is you have the best home field advantage in football right now by far. So probably the best the best home field advantage I've seen in a long time. And I like the Saints, you know, Kansas City in their heyday, the Saints in their head right now, but still, there's nothing that I've ever seen that comes close to this in about 15, 20 years. Like, this home field advantage that they have is just ridiculous. So you look at that versus the 49ers, who right now are probably playing the best football of any team in the league. Give me your initial thoughts on that.
Just my initial thoughts. So, this is going to be, you know, a cage match. This is putting two big gorillas in and just having them go at two bucks, you know, just like whatever analogy you can come up with of just two big strong things and then slamming into each other. That's what this is going to be. Good luck to those quarterbacks. It's going to be tough sledding on both sides. It's going to be tough sledding. I think from just like the different things that I've heard this week, again, 24-hour news cycle, so people have to feel it. People have been trying to talk themselves into the 49ers, right?
Trying
to figure out how can the 49ers be into this game, because recent history tells you that Seattle will be able to run the ball on the 49ers. Marshawn Lynch is the back that has the most success against them. The 49ers in Seattle don't particularly perform well. Like, it just is. And the last time we saw Kaepernick in the Superdome, is that it? I can't even remember what they're called.
Questfield.
Yeah, sure. Yes, Questfield. He looked like a scared little boy. You know, like just absolutely befuddled by the crowd, the defense, and everything like that. So I do agree that he's matured since then. I do agree that
and
the 49ers are playing their – and have Crabtree back and are playing their best of the year. But I also think that all the things that make Seattle Seattle and all the things that make Seattle Seattle versus the 49ers are very real too. So it's going to be tough for San Francisco to win this game.
You know, there are a lot of people, more people than I expected. There are a lot of people that are picking the 49ers to win this game.
Yeah,
a lot of people. Now, the whole idea is, you know, they're playing better football. Seattle's been struggling of late. The offensively has been struggling. Russell Wilson has been struggling the last month of the season. Quarterback rate is probably around 80 the last 5 weeks. So he had the offense has been struggling from that standpoint. So I'll give people that. But I have to look at that. You know, home field means something in this game. It absolutely means something in this game, without question. And I have to look at just the matchups. You know, the matchups of it. That Seattle secondary, like you said, has been a nemesis to Kaepernick in his career, and especially the last couple of matchups. The Seattle secondary is probably one of the best secondaries. I mean, it's the best secondary in football, but it's probably one of the best secondaries in NFL history, to be honest with you.
Let's hit the pause button for a second. I truly did not think it was possible to build a secondary like that in today's NFL. I truly didn't think it was possible anymore. Because the last secondary I can kind of remember like this was like the 94 49ers, where it was like Hanks and like all the different,
yeah,
like three out of the four went to the Pro Bowl, and they just like, I didn't think in the modern day NFL it would be possible to have a secondary like this. That secondary is so for real. It's terrifying. It's terrifying. I know there'll be a lot of kick up and dust about, oh, they hold and they're blah, 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 blah. But that's finesse teams who like to pass everything. They're always going to complain about that. They're always going to complain about it, because that should be the objective of the opposing secondary, to rough the receivers up,
yeah,
throw them off their
absolutely
route. That should be your objective.
Yeah.
So they're always going to complain about that. That secondary is the truth. And not only are they physical at the line of scrimmage, but they will hit you harder than you can remember. They're terrifying. That secondary is for real.
And the secondary is so good. They're so good that they're missing Brandon Browner was All-Pro last season. So they're actually missing an All-Pro, so which is scary. So they, Earl Thomas, best safety in football, without question. Sherman, arguably the best quarterback in football. And Cam Chancellor is an All-Pro. It was All-Pro this year. So they have three All-Pros,
yep,
in that secondary. And the secondary, their secondary is so good that they can create a pass rush with coverage.
Yep.
They can create a pass rush with coverage. Like, so if the quarterback goes through his initial progressions and has time to throw the ball, he still doesn't have any – nobody's still open. It gets to a point to where, you know, you can only – the offensive line can only hold up on the defensive line for so long. Then you get a coverage sack. That's how good their secondary is. So people, like, that'll be a very – that it's going to be, you know, which – who gets the best of that matchup between the 49ers front seven, which is, I think, is the best in the NFL, versus Seattle's offensive line, or the San Francisco wide receivers versus who wins that particular matchup? Gets the best of those particular matches, because those matchups could very much decide this football game. So
it definitely will. Like, conversely to the other game, which is fascinating because of Brady. It's fascinating because of all that stuff, which is great. I mean, like, you know, but there's a lot of, like, mental and, like, thinking of, like, this game I'm so excited for, because this is, like, just a contest on the field. Like, this is going to be about what, you know, not to be corny and everything like that, but what football is built on. Strength versus strength. Who's stronger? You know, who can punish the man in front of them enough that they break first. The crazy thing is, because you say Seattle secondary versus 49ers front seven, well, the 49ers secondary and Seattle's front seven are great too in their own right, or very good in their own right. It's just the other one's strength is so great that it outshines the other. So you have you have two complete defenses, just complete defense.
Yes.
And I
think
like that's why I'm less worried about Russell Wilson than Colin Kaepernick, because I don't think the Seattle Seahawks could care less if they win this game 10-3. Could care less if they won it 5-3. You know, and like I don't think they need or are anticipating Russell Wilson to have any type of day that looks great on the stat sheet, as long as he doesn't turn the ball over and as long as he doesn't put them in third and long. I think
you feel like there's more pressure on Kaepernick to be better than it is Russell Wilson? Because I was going to ask you that. You think it's more pressure on Kaepernick?
Yes, because of the mentality of the coaches. John Harbaugh, I'm saying John, mix them up. Jim Harbaugh. Jim Harbaugh loves his offense and loves his offensive mind. So he's still, like, even though he has this fantastic defense that was part of the, you know, the Alex Smith switch over to Kaepernick, even though he has this fantastic defense, it still bothers him. Kind of like, you remember Ravens. What's his name? Brian Billick, Bill Belichick. Brian Billick, when he was, you know, even though he had this all-world defense, he just had to keep figuring out the offense. It's his offensive mind. So I think for Jim Harbaugh, it still will buy, like, he needs to score. He needs to see his offense put points on the board. And I don't necessarily know if he can envision a 10-7 game, a 10-3 game, as clearly as the Seattle Seahawks can. So I think there'll be more chances for mistakes to happen with Kaepernick and Jim Harbaugh on the opposite side versus Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll.
So you think that San Francisco, you think San Francisco will definitely take more risk as more risk in Seattle. Seattle will play more closer to the vest, obviously. Because Seattle's content. Seattle's going to run the ball, so you know, like they're content with Marshawn Lynch getting 25 carries for only 80 yards, something like that. So they're going to run the ball. You think they will take less chance in terms of down the field and things of that nature?
The reason why Seattle's been so effective against the 49ers and running the ball is they're willing to just do those body blows in the beginning. And those blows in the beginning aren't going to yield you great results, right? Like a lot of teams just get frustrated immediately. It's a passing league, of course. You know, the 49ers crush you for the first quarter. So it's just like, ugh, this ain't working. Let's pass. Let's go. The Seattle Seahawks the first few series are going to be, you know, 3, 2, maybe 1 yard, you know, but we're going to keep grinding and keep doing it so that in the third and fourth quarter, those 3, 2 yarders start to be 5, 7, 8, 10, 20, and then the big break off run. So that shows me that they're willing to go through the patience of the initial one to set up that later one. And the reason that they can do that, of course, is because they have a great defense. If you don't have a great defense, you can't afford to be playing around with early downs. But they have the confidence in their defense that they're gonna be able to put the stop on the 49ers offense. I mean, yeah, the 49ers offense. And let's just for all these people that are picking San Francisco, like, what in the past few meetings between these two teams says that San Francisco is going to pose a threat offensively?
Nothing. I mean, nothing. I mean, if you look at even like even the last game they played. Let's be honest. The last game they played, Seattle. You know, it was 1917. Seattle, San Francisco won. Gore had broke off the big 51-yard run, and they said they ended up kicking the field goal. And that was in San Francisco. So even in that game, I said nice win for San Francisco, but I didn't see enough to say, wow, I think they're better. You know, I didn't see enough to say, well, you know, they've exercised the demons of Seattle as far as winning at Seattle. I have not seen enough, unless you think Michael Crabtree is Jerry Rice.
Unless you say,
Michael Crabtree is fully back, he's fully healthy now. They, you know, it gives them something else to worry about. Maybe they can't commit, you know, to 8-man the box the way they could, which I don't believe. Seattle absolutely is going to dare Kaepernick to beat them passing. They're not going to commit. They're going to commit 8 in the box to stop. They're going to absolutely go man to man and commit 8 to 9 in the box to stop Gore without question. Gore is. The key to this 49ers team offense is Frank Gore.
There you go.
Seattle wants to take away Frank Gore. They say if we can stop, forget Crabtree. Say if we can stop Frank Gore, Crabtree becomes a non-issue at that point.
The two most important names that should be hearing that I haven't heard enough, which could also be a really good thing. That means Jim isn't tipping his hand, which is perfect, is Frank Gore and then Kendall Hunter. Like, those two backs should receive the ball 40 times. Should be that type of running, like that type of running day. If that's happening, this game is going to be close as all get out.
Yeah.
But if the 49ers get frustrated with the early non-success of the run, because it's going to be the flip side for them, you're not going to break out chunks early on against that Seattle defense. If they start getting into a passing, they're playing directly into the 49ers'
Absolutely.
Seattle's strength.
Yeah, listen, if Kaepernick has more than 30 passing attempts, it's a major problem.
I would want him to go over 20, 25.
Yeah, maybe 25. Maybe 25 is that magic number. If he has more than 25, if he can start getting over 25, then look out. Because the Seattle secondary is like, okay. And that's the one thing about Carolina last week. As good as Carolina's defense was, the thing that got exposed was that I didn't realize that secondary is just not that good. It's okay, but the secondary is just not that good. So that's why they were. I mean, you had receivers running wide open at that time when Bolden and what have you against that Carolina secondary. That will not be the case against Seattle.
No,
broken coverages and things. That doesn't. No, when people beat Seattle secondary is because their receivers made great plays to get the ball. I haven't seen any receivers run free 10, 15 yards get behind. No, I haven't seen it. So it is an absolute must that San Francisco run the football and stay patient with the run. Even if the first half they only have 17 carries for 40 yards or 30 yards, they have to stick with the run and get it and turn it into a four quarter game. And that's the thing too. If you're San Francisco, because this can happen. This happened to the Saints. I've seen this happen to the Saints twice. Seen this happen to a lot of teams. You can lose this game against Seattle in the first 5 minutes. You can get blown out. It could be 17-0 before the national anthem. Before you blink, it could be 14-0, 17-0. If you're San Francisco, if you have an opportunity to either kick a field goal or it's 4th-and-1, kick the field goal. kick the field goal. I don't care if it's 4th and inches, kick the field goal. Get those first points. Those first points, John Madden always emphasizes the importance of first points. I agree with him wholeheartedly. In this case, I agree with him times 20. Those first points are critical, critical for San Francisco. Because in these games, the home team already has an advantage in terms of the crowd and what have you. In Seattle, again, it's tenfold. So, you know, I'm saying if San Francisco, if you can get an early field goal, a touchdown, great. Sure, you get a touchdown there. Absolutely, you take it. But you can even get an early field goal. Or if the game is 0-0 after the first quarter, you will take it. You will take it. Don't get blown out the first quarter. Don't fall behind more than two possessions. Don't be down 10-0, 14-0 in the first few minutes of the game, because the crowd, you know, and one thing that would concern me about San Francisco and thing that Chad brought up is these timeouts in terms of getting plays in. Have you noticed that those first couple of playoff games?
Burning
timeouts to get plays in. So they can't waste, especially second half. You can't waste timeouts in the second half trying to get a play in, because Colin Kaepernick has forgot his wristband. I mean, that can't happen.
Yeah, this is like for me. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, we already know that this is the loudest crowd in the NFL. So they're gonna be doing a lot of silent counts as it is.
Yeah. I mean, you got to totally eliminate that from the game plan in terms of like being able to effectively communicate. You got to totally eliminate that. You got to assume you're not going to be able to communicate through any of the standard methods, whether it be voice in the head or like the being able to like have audible signals. So hopefully in San Francisco game plan is how we're going to deal with all of that. But it's really hard to simulate that. The other thing I wanted to add on to the first score is field position. Field position is going to be huge in this game.
The punting, and I'll give you this number. Both these teams have excellent special teams. Field goal kick punters, coverage. Seattle's punt coverage at one point this year only gave up 19 yards. And this maybe was in week 13, 14, 19 yards. Of punt.
19 yards a game or 19 yards total?
Total.
Wow.
Total.
That's a great stat. Wow.
This was like in week, and I'm sure that number went up, because this was like in week 13 or 14.
Wow.
So around week 13, 14, they only gave up 19 yards total. A total punt yard. That was insane coverage. So they're like field. It will be a field position game again. If it goes between versus 4th and 1, 4th and 2, punt the football. Just punt it. Field goal. Punt the football. If you don't have confidence in it, both of them have excellent field goal kickers. So they, you know, you'll see some attempts. I would be nervous, depending on how the conditions are in terms of the wind. I would be nervous to even try long field goals. To be honest with you.
Yeah. No, I mean, you can tell like that against that Seattle, New Orleans game when New Orleans was kicking a long field goal. I was just like, you're such a dome team. You're like, there's no way he's making that field goal.
You're
swirling around here. What are you doing? Punt the ball. New Orleans has such a dome mentality that's just like, oh, no, yeah, 48-yarder is absolutely in the thing. Yeah, in the dome it is, not here. You're absolutely right. You don't attempt. If it's on the cusp of range where you're nervous about, punt that football. Punt it. Because field position is going to mean everything.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And the punting of the field position is going to be critical with these two defenses. I mean, this is a game where, you know, I'm normally not conservative in terms of play calling things of that nature, but this is a game to somewhat be conservative. This is a game because the risk versus reward, you know, in this type of game, one play, one bad punt, one missed field goal could be the difference in this game. Absolutely could be the difference in this type of game. I don't expect a lot of points to begin with. I really don't. I don't expect a lot of points in this game. So every possession, there can't be any wasted possessions in terms of making a critical mistake. This is the ultimate don't beat yourself game. You know,
yeah.
I mean, this is a game where you just, hey, you trust your defenses, you trust your game plan, and you stick to it. You're like, all right, we're going to trust what we do, even if it's not successful, and stick to it. I want to get back to a point that you brought up about the quarterbacks with Brady and Manning. And no, about the quarterbacks in terms of the high salary. And
yeah,
when you look at it, ever since Ben Roethlisberger, and I don't think any quarterback has won the Super Bowl in recent memory after signing a big contract, whether it's Aaron Rodgers, Ben Roethlisberger, Brady, Manning, whoever, mm-hmm. Eli Manning. I don't think any of them. I think Drew Brees came after it. What about Drew Brees?
Yeah, because remember, he had to hold out the following season.
The Super Bowl didn't have to hold out, right? Right.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason why that point was relevant is you have two teams right now that are absolutely stacked and loaded with talent, all pros all over the place.
Everywhere.
These are two of the most talented teams I've seen in recent memory in the NFL. To be honest with you, from top to bottom, and they have that luxury because they have quarterbacks who are making like $650,000. So they have.
Yeah, I mean, like.
Go
ahead, Fox. Yeah.
I
would be interested in what both of those, because both of those quarterbacks, they're not even number one picks where it'd be like the mandated $25 million, you know, 5 years or 4 years, whatever it is, like right there, which is a bargain in itself. These guys are for real bargains. like you said, $150,000. I would be interested. I don't even know their contract numbers. That's how low it is.
I know Russell Wilson is at $650,000, and Kaepernick was a second round pick. So I would assume that it'd be probably around that $450,000 to $650,000 range that they're making. But the bottom line is, after next year, it's a 4 year. So this will be this year three for this is Kaepernick's third year. He didn't play his first year. So Kaepernick's third year. So after next year, he's going to get paid. Wilson still has two more years left on his deal. So Seattle actually has an extra year on his rookie deal, because this is only Wilson's second year. This is even more. This game is even bigger to me. I think this game is even bigger for San Francisco than it is for Seattle from that standpoint, and from the standpoint of Harbaugh reaching the conference championship game three straight years. Because you reach the game three straight years with no Super Bowls, then you're not going to get criticized, but it'll be a major disappointment for them not to get to a Super Bowl or to get back to a Super Bowl, especially in a year where your team, where the NFC is going to be favored regardless of who they face, you know, in the Super Bowl game. I think more pressure. There's pressure on both sides. Seattle has home field. Obviously nobody likes losing home playoff games. But I think there's more pressure on San Francisco, considering that a lot of people feel like San Francisco from top to bottom has a better team. I think it's a wash myself. I think they both are equal. San Francisco might have a couple more Pro Bowlers and all Pro people, but I think in terms of the matchup, it's a wash as far as the talent. But a lot of people feel like San Francisco does have the better team, and the fact that San Francisco has made it to three straight conference championship games. So from that standpoint, maybe a little bit more pressure, and the fact that they're going to have to pay Kaepernick after next year, and they're going to have to pay Kaepernick, like, he's going to have to be one of the top five quarterbacks as far as salaries goes in today's market. You see what Joe Flacco got. So so the pressure definitely, if you're San Francisco, that sense of urgency is going to be there from a standpoint of from those two standpoints. But yeah, these two teams have had the luxury that no team has had in recent memory of having above average quarterbacks that make next to nothing. That doesn't exist in the NFL today because the quarterback position is so premium. It just doesn't. It's something that you just don't see. And again, I give their general managers credit in terms of their personnel of knowing how to pick players. So yeah, obviously they these two teams have drafted well and gotten the right free agents. That is something to think about. Entry updates in terms of no Percy Harvin, surprise.
They should have just ruled him out. As soon as he took that second hit, go, bye, Percy, sit down, go.
Austin Collie, like, man, I didn't think the hit was like that. I'm like, my goodness. Like, you are a walking concussion.
He is a walking, living, breathing injury waiting to happen. I truly believe now a stiff wind will have him out for 6 weeks.
Carlos Rogers will play for San Francisco, so they'll have Carlos Rogers. Everybody else, of course, other than that, there's no major injury concerns. The officiating will be a key in this game as well, from two standpoints. Number one, obviously Seattle secondary is very physical. Seattle, what Seattle secondary is like? They're like the old Detroit Pistons, just foul you on every play. They can't call it all. They can't call all of them. We just going to grab on every snap. We just going to grab them.
That's funny.
They get out there every foul. So that could be a key. And also with San Francisco, and this was to their own detriment from last week, all this yapping and talking, especially Anquan Boldin, and Troy Aikman got on him about that. Expect to see a lot of early penalties call in this game. Gene Saracen, I can't pronounce his name, but one of the best officials in the NFL, considered maybe to be the best, will be officiating the game, and I'm glad he is. So he'll have total control of this game. Because it looked like in the Carolina game that the refs lost control of the game. Like, some of the flags were suspect. It looked like they lost control of the game at one point. So I don't think that will be a problem. But, you know, early, again, Seattle doesn't care about the penalties from the past. Seattle rather will take a pass interference penalty rather than give up a big play anyway. So from that standpoint, but I'd be very interested to see a holding calls, a legal contact calls are made early on in this game. Of course, like, to me, the less that are made, that favors Seattle as far as the physicality standpoint with their secondary.
Yeah. I mean, it's been interesting. I've been watching the playoffs, and, you know, there was such a high amount of pass interference call during the regular season and just like a general favoring of the offense. And so I expected that to continue in the playoffs. But it's been interesting that they've actually been letting these guys play a lot more in the playoffs, particularly with the differential of how it was called in the regular season, where it looked like you couldn't blow on a receiver and not have at least, you know, an illegal contact penalty happen or holding, you know. So it's been interesting there. So I hope it remains consistent. You know, like, I hope it doesn't go on the flip side of it. And if anything is like, if history tells us anything, when the team that complains about pass interference and everything happening, that usually doesn't help their case. I think the obvious one is the Colts when they were complaining about the Patriots.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like, if you're complaining about that, then that doesn't help your case. I haven't heard any of San Francisco's offensive players say anything about that, or the Colts say anything about that this week. Doesn't mean it hasn't happened. I just haven't heard it. So it seems like it's more coming from talking heads and other people than it's actually coming from the players. So I just hope it's called consistent and let them play within the rules of the game. But I do think there is something to be said about keeping control of the game, because I agree with you. I think that Carolina-San Francisco game got a little bit ridiculous. in terms of just like the amount of extracurricular stuff that was going on and the amount of talking and the different or the randomness of when things penalties were being called. I think that's the worst situation you can get in, where one team gets flagged for this, the other team doesn't get flagged for this, the other team gets flagged for that, the other team doesn't get flagged for that. So, like, just the randomness of it. And so I think, like, whatever it is that happens, just maintain the consistency throughout the game. And I think that will you know, streamline and everybody will adjust and be fine at that point in time. Just take the randomness out of it.
Yeah, I mean, here's what you don't want to see. You just don't want – I mean, you want to see the game under control, obviously. But you, at the same time, you don't want to see an official decide the game in
right,
the fourth
exactly.
quarter. That's the word. You don't want to see that at all. So, okay, keep control of the game early on. Set the tone. You want to call a couple cheapies early, so be it. And the fourth quarter, you know, let them play. Fourth quarter, let the players decide. Let the players decide, and we can gauge it from that. This game, this rivalry.
If I'm on the official crew, really quick. If I'm the official crew, I want to focus on the first guy, right? Me and you are in education. We tell our kids this all the time. It's the second person that gets called, which is true.
Most of the time, it's the second person that gets called.
If I'm the official crew. Like, I'm really, really focusing in on the first guy to do X. Like, I'm really focusing in on that because it's the retaliatory stuff. It's the other side, whoever's the other side. If they feel like they're getting hit, punched, extra this, that, and it's not being called, that's what could spiral into, like, you know, a big melee or, like, you know, something that will – impact the flow of the game by having a player ejected or whatever it is, like that's the piece that could. So if I'm official, I'm really, really zoning in and just scanning constantly who's the one who's punching first or hitting first. So I make sure I tag them within the first few minutes, which I think will calm all that stuff down. If the other players feel like, okay, the refs are on it, they're calling it, when he does that, that takes the onus of retaliation down.
Absolutely. Very interesting to see, and I'll be watching this from the first game, in contrast to the first game, is more about, I think, strategy and, you know, game planning and, you know, disguising coverages, things like that. The first game is basically a technical war, I would say, This game is like, we're in the same division, we know each other well, you know, this game is big boy football at its highest level, like blocking, tackling, hitting, whatever, you know, what have you. It'd be very interesting to see the wrinkle that either one of these teams throw at each other and how whatever unit, the offense or defense adjusts to that. I'm sure that there'll be something that one of these teams throw at each other that they might not have not seen over the course of this past year, what have you, and how again, how quickly, if it's effective, or how quickly the opposing team, adjusts to that wrinkle, because it's going to be hard because these teams know each other so well in the same division, and it's more about just being, you know, it'll be more about not out tricking or disguising, but it'll be more about just who does what better than anything. Then we'll be about it, the outsmarting or outcoaching one another.
I don't think Belichick invented this by any stretch of the imagination, because I think he learned, you know, of course, a tremendous amount from Bill Parcells. But I do think he brought this into the lexicon of football talk, situational football. There's nothing new that the Seattle Seahawks or the San Francisco 49ers can put throughout the entire game plan. Like, just something new game plan-wise, like, oh, my God, we didn't anticipate they'll be doing this entire game. But in certain situations, they can present something different that the team hasn't seen before. And that's what you look to see. In a third, like, you know, they know your tendency here, and then through setting it up throughout the game, them anticipating a tendency, and then you doing something different in that moment to get a big play or to cause a turnover or to something like that. I think that will be like the little twist that will be in there, because you're absolutely right. These teams know each other backwards, forwards, sideways, just every which way. They've seen it all. So it'll be those specific moments in which they can present something different through tendency-based football that will hopefully or negatively impact the teams.
Yes, I mean, yeah. Yeah. I mean, to me, this, you know, I think ultimately what this game comes down to, and you can look at it, what this game is going to come down to is, you know, who's going to run the ball, who's going to be more effective in terms of running the football. You know, well, you know, I think San Francisco will be patient with the run. I don't think they'll go crazy trying to throw the ball all over the place. I think Harbaugh is smart enough not to know that feeds right into Seattle's wheelhouse. But who's going to be more effective at running the ball? Because a good indication of how these teams have played and the outcome has been, you know, Gore versus Lynch. That's been a pretty good indicator in the last couple of years, especially since Harbaugh became the 49 coach, on which team wins the game, in terms of who performs better out of those two teams, who performs better out of those two backs. So that, to me, is, you know, putting turnovers aside, now you get a lot of turnovers that can all go out the
the
window.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So obviously, putting turnovers aside, who, you know, which one of those backs impact has the bigger impact on the game? You know, can Seattle, we know Seattle can run on San Francisco because we've seen it. Can San Francisco run on Seattle effectively? You know, can Gore run on San Francisco, on Seattle effectively enough to keep Seattle somewhat off balance and not make Colin Kaepernick a target? So what is your prediction for the game?
It's big boy football here. This is like just
Steelers,
exactly. Like Steelers Baltimore, like we are just going to line up, and then it's going to be will versus will, strength versus strength. I see it, of course, being, you know, just a hard-hitting, brutal game that I can't wait to see. I think the two things that are so real, I think the home field advantage is real in Seattle. I just think it's real. And then I also know that secondary is the truth. And so that will lead them to have as many men as they'll need to control the running game so it doesn't get out of control. I think eventually Harbaugh's will to the running game will break, and then that will start to open up the floodgates as San Francisco gets in different third and longs that they don't want to be in. So I have the game something like 24-10 Seattle. I'll be rooting for San Francisco because our friend Chad, but I can't talk myself into Seattle not coming out of this in not convincing fashion, but they'll win. They'll win, and it won't be a nail biter. Because I just think that home field probably tilts it more so than if it was on the neutral field. 24-10 Seattle.
24-10, okay. I like Seattle much closer game. I think it's going to be a nail. I do think it's going to be a nail biter. I like Seattle 21-17. I think I think it'll be a defensive game. I think the difference will be that Seattle secondary. I think they're so dominant that I could see San Francisco being frustrated with not being able to. I could see them frustrating the San Francisco receivers Bolden and Crabtree. Like, the problem with the San Francisco receivers in terms of them matching up with Seattle is they really don't have any speed receivers. Like, their fastest player is Vernon Davis, so on the outside.
Yeah.
And they can, again, they have somebody. They have, again, Earl Thomas, Sherman, whoever you want, they have matchups. They can, like, the Seattle secondary can perfectly match up with San Francisco receivers and take them out, I feel. So I think that when I'm looking at that matchup, I think that that will be – I wonder what Kaepernick – you know, how Kaepernick will do when he looks and sees nobody that nobody's open and is not able to, you know, run away from the Seattle front seven like he is normal front seven. Because, again, Seattle probably is the fastest defense in the NFL, like, in terms of speed. They have – they.
Yep.
I mean – They have speed all around, not only in secondary, but in the front seven. They have a lot of hybrid
everywhere.
Linebackers, defensive end. So he won't have the kind of running lanes that I feel like he's had against Green Bay and against Carolina to get these big runs that we've seen him have. And I think Seattle is disciplined enough with the pass rush not to give him those running lanes. Like, Seattle is not a sack happy team. They don't really care about sacks. They can get some, but they're not going to compromise the integrity of their rush lanes to try to go after a sack. So they're very fundamentally sound on their front seven, very disciplined, very much content with saying, you know what, we got the best secondary in the world. We can generate pressure, but we're not going to go too, you know, we're not giving Kaepernick these running lanes and throwing these running lanes so he can break off 30 or 40 yard runs against us. So I think they will frustrate Kaepernick enough to where he, like Peyton Manning, he will make a critical mistake that will tilt the favor in Seattle's tilt the game in Seattle's favor. Like, I think Russell Wilson would be solid. I think Kaepernick will have a couple spectacular plays, but I think for the most part, I think Russell Wilson will be solid and play the game manager to a T. Hand off Marshawn Lynch, convert a couple third downs, maybe occasionally take a shot down the field, you know, things something like that. But I think Kaepernick will make a mistake, and mostly through the air, that will cost him. Because remember that Green Bay game, he threw Michael Hyde dropped an interception that would have probably given Green Bay the game. He's had some passes where guys have dropped interceptions in these first couple playoff games. So he does have a little Brett Favre in him, not nowhere near to Brett Favre, extended Brett Favre, but he does have some gunslinger in him. He has a lot of confidence in his ability. He has some gunslinger tendencies that can cost him at times. And again, gunslinger and Seattle secondary don't mix.
It does not
mix whatsoever. So with that being said,
I don't think we can state this enough that secondary is the best secondary that I've seen in 20 years, like easily. Easily, and you might be right. Like that secondary, when all is said and done, if they keep a majority of it together,
of all time, yes,
we're seeing one of the greats. However it is you want to measure it, I don't think we can overstate that enough, because that's going to play in big time in the we both think they're going to the Super. That's going to play in big time in the Super Bowl.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, they again.
It's unreal what they can do.
There are no weaknesses. And I didn't even mention the guy, what's his name, Max Eel. He's good, too. Like, he's a weak link, but he's also on another team. He would be like a Pro Bowler.
That secondary can go six deep.
Yes.
Like,
at least,
easy. Between
at
the
least.
Safeties and the cornerbacks. There's like that doesn't even make sense in today's NFL. There are teams that can't find one. There's teams that can't find one. These guys can cover you from corner to safety, four, and then can go two to three deep in their bench and have you covered. It's we can't state that enough, how good that secondary is.
most part, and for the most part, I know Earl Thomas dropped a couple last week against the Saints. They don't drop interceptions for the most part. They don't drop. Like, they don't. They had 28 interceptions, which led to the NFL this year. They don't drop. They are a ball-hawking. They are a ball-hawking secondary. Like, they do not drop interceptions. Like I said, Earl Thomas is by far and away the best safety in football. That dude, he could be the defensive player of the year. Wouldn't be surprised if he got it. You know, we know about Richard Sherman. Even with all the trash talking, he backs it up. You know, Cam Chancellor, like, pro safety. Like, so just all around how dominant of a unit that secondary is right now.
Because I want to challenge people, because you think, all right, what's the greatest defenses we've seen in the past 20 years? You got, of course, the Baltimore Ravens come up first. And then Tampa Bay, you'll probably say, after that.
One of the Pittsburgh defenses.
Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And so I think with those, like, the defining characteristics you have, great front seven, can stop the run, can outside rush, and then you have a hard-hitting safety and cover corners, like McAllister with there, but you don't have the 1-4. Lynch with the Bucks, Reed with the, and Palomalu with that. And you had good corners, but that, like, the front seven was the dominant piece, and then in the back end, you had somebody who could physically impose the will. This group can do everything. And they make their front seven that much stronger because they can do everything. Very impressive.
I mean,
very impressive.
Yeah, the front seven, again, San Francisco has the best front seven in the league, I feel. Seattle's front seven is not nothing to sneeze about. You know, they have some players, Irving, Bruce Irving. Those guys it's not a weakness by any stretch. So their front seven is their front seven, you know, they're good against the run. They are tackling machines. Like, you don't, like, scrambling quarterbacks don't normally aren't effective at scrambling against them. So their front seven is not, like I said, it's not a weakness. But that secondary makes their front seven even look better than what it really is, because, again, they're able to just lock down receivers. And, you know, again, a block, the line can only block for so long before you get pressure and your quarterback, before the play just breaks down.
And you know what, Cyril, what we're forgetting to mention with that secondary? And this is the part where I just didn't even know these players existed. They're big. They're 6 foot. They can match up
6'4", 6'3",
physically, size-wise with these receivers, which is something different than anything. Like, me and my brother, we talked about, like, what would have to happen in the modern-day NFL to start slowing down these passer offenses. And I thought they would have to be, like, some, like, hybrid linebacker, something that can cover – you know, that can cover the tight end just super well and can also rush and, like, just, like, something like that. I didn't know there was just 6'4 cornerbacks running around out there that Pete Carroll has managed to find and collect in one place. It's amazing.
All their guys, Chancellor, Thomas, Sherman all 6 foot and over. Sherman and Cam Chancellor are like 6'3".
Yeah.
You know, they're like linebackers playing secondary. Like, it's unreal. It's like, it's nothing that I've never seen before either. Like, in terms of the size of their secondary, that you're not gonna push it right again. They're the bullies. They don't get bullied. They're the bullies. So Bolden and Vernon Davis and Crabtree, who they normally guys who, you know, get, who are very physical receivers, all of them, they're gonna have to beat them with skill, not just brute force. It's gonna be perfectly ran routes, you know.
Yep.
They're gonna have to make great plays.
Yeah.
So it's not gonna be we're gonna just out physical. They're not gonna out, like, Bolden is as physical a receiver as they ever played. Again, he's not pushing around with the sermon. You saw.
And you remember, like, and that's it's so funny to see somebody mention this. Yes, exactly.
Then a week later against Seattle, he was like a non-factor.
A ghost.
Yeah,
and it's so interesting
yards.
In the last – yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and the Green Bay opening game, Bolden had 200 yards receiving. They had like 10 yards against Seattle.
Yep.
In the second game.
And this game, last game, Bolden just had like a huge game. You know, people are feeling. We're gonna see. Yep. And this is great for people. Like, just watch what Bolden does in this game versus what he just did in the last game. That will tell you the difference. You will see the difference in a great secondary versus the average secondary of Carolina.
It'll be interesting to see how they match up, whether they put Sherman on Bolden or Sherman on Crabtree. I would think that they probably would start with Sherman on Crabtree unless Bolden starts getting off against the other quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know. I think Bolden is the offensive fire plug, the spark on the offense. Kind of like how Michael Irvin was for those Cowboys teams, right?
Sure.
You know, so I think you probably you don't want him to get going.
Right.
So here's the thing. I think you could take Crabtree out of the game just purely by being physical with him.
Yeah, that's
so
good point.
I think you can put any of those cornerbacks and just be physical and then take Crabtree right out of the game.
Right.
I think Sherman having Sherman and Bolden just go through that battle and just making sure Bolden's not a factor, particularly in the early part of the game, is probably what you want to do unless you see, like, Crabtree start to really get off.
Right, right.
So it'll be interesting.
Yeah.
That would just be the thought in my head, but, you know, who am I?
They can match up. They can match up anyway, which way they want.
Yeah. They're the only team in the league that can match up. I guess the viewers can tell how much we like Seattle. They're the only team in the league that can match up with any receiving core out there.
Yes.
Period.
Yes. Yes. They are. They literally are. Yes.
There is no receiving core that they're going to be scared of at all.
No.
Zero.
No. 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 Absolutely not. I mean, like, the winner of this game, and I was talking to Chad about this, the winner of this game will be a favorite in the Super Bowl. I've already saw some of the lines. They said, you know, if it's Seattle
9
versus New England. I thought I saw less than that. See, I said Seattle, New England was like a 5-point favorite. Damn, at 5. Seattle, Denver was 3. San Francisco, New England was like, San Francisco, Denver was like 2, something like that.
Yeah.
So, depending again, a lot of that will go, like, if Seattle goes out there and blows out San Francisco, then that number will jump.
Yeah.
Big time. So, see, like, let's say hypothetically, if Seattle goes out there and wins 31-10, they will be a 7 to 8-point favorite over either one of those teams, easily.
Yeah.
Because people believe they're the two best teams in football in Seattle and San Francisco.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's by 8. Like, I would favor the NFC team by at least 8 points. And I'll tell you why. Because the difference between the defenses of the Patriots and the Broncos versus either Seattle or San Francisco versus the differences in the offenses isn't that great, right? So, like, the offenses, like, Kaepernick is going to be able to do a variety of different things, either against New England's defense or Denver's defense, either using his athleticism to make plays. Same thing with Russell Wilson. They'll be able to do things offensively to make plays, just because they don't have the horses on defense that can contain them. They just don't. Neither one of those teams do. Von Miller's out on that side. We've already spoke about, you know, all the deficiencies on the Patriots defense. Running the ball, like, even with the Patriots' newfound love of the running game, running the ball for either of those teams is going to be a hard day.
It's
a hard day. And then Denver's offense probably matches up the best against either one of those defenses. But again, defenses, they have multiple things. And then both of those quarterbacks do not like being moved off the spot. And both of those defenses are going to move the quarterback
off the spot. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So you just see with the Patriots, the thing about the Patriots, you know, and they are morphed into a different team, and I totally see that. But the thing about the Patriots is they don't like physical defenses. Neither one of these teams like physical defenses.
No, not at all.
So anyway, we're getting into the Super Bowl. So I think the NFC person, I've been, you know, and I'm an AFC guy, so for me to be saying this, you know, I just see such a clear advantage on the other side, team-wise. Quarterbacks, yes, great quarterbacks, but team-wise, I just think the two best teams are San Francisco and Seattle, and it's
a
touchdown at least.
This is the mistake that people are going to make. You don't discount a Manning or a Brady in the Super Bowl. And people will make that mistake when looking at it, but you don't do it. But you just got to go by the facts of the facts. These are the two best teams. And the bottom line is that division, look at that. Look how good that division is. When your last place team destroyed the Indianapolis Colts on their home field and had some of the wins that they had against the Bears,
in the private conversation that St. Louis could get Jadeveon Clowney, that just sent shivers down my spine. I was just like, ooh, that's just terrifying. And that's your fourth best team in the division.
That division outside their own playing each other, that division was 30-10. Okay.
Yeah.
30-10. So that, you know, not only the two best teams, they played in the best division by far in football. So the weakness of how weak the AFC is versus, you know, that division and the strength of the NFC team, you're probably right. It will be probably like 7 or 8.
And let's not forget, Peyton Manning had the opportunity to go to the 49ers. I think part of that, what led into that decision of not going, I mean, there were different pieces, but part of that was he looked at that division and said, there's a lot of hating going on here. Let me go to the AFC West.
That's a good point. That's a very good point. Like, these defenses might be a little bit too physical. Like, even a bad idea. That is a brutal division.
Yeah.
Which is one of the reasons why we can talk about how young Seattle is and how young San Francisco is. That division, those teams are coming. Arizona, St. Louis, those teams are coming. So you can't take this for granted. Like, we're going to get back here next year. No. Arizona is coming. St. Louis is coming. So you, like, this is even creates more of a sense of urgency if you're San Francisco or Seattle to get to the Super Bowl and to win the Super Bowl. Because next year we can get shocked or either one of those teams in there.
No.
One of those teams in there. I mean,
the Seattle is 13-1. Oh wait, no. What's it? 12-1. Wait, no, because it'll be 8 games. Is it 15-1? Because it'll be 8 games.
No, 16-1 the last couple seasons.
15-1, and the one is Arizona.
Right. Yep.
And I watched that game. That was one of the most physical games I've seen in my. You know, and that's saying something in the new era we in. That was just a fist fight. Arizona came to fight, and they did. That was an impressive game. So no, it wouldn't surprise me as these teams mature and get themselves together that we're not looking at a potential like Arizona. Or depending upon Bradford and how that looks next year, you know, St. Louis being right there in the mix.
Yeah, so it creates that much more urgency again for San Francisco and Seattle to, like I said, to get to the Super Bowl. So we'll have plenty of time to talk about the Super Bowl. Matter of fact, Monday we'll do a show on Monday talking in terms of recapping these games and giving a sneak
peek. Yeah.
Yep, and get a sneak Super Bowl preview, so stay tuned for the times to be announced on that. That's going to wrap it up for this special edition of the Super Bowl Review. Thank you, Robert Sapp, for joining the audience. Again, Seattle and New England. We both like Seattle and New England to face in the Super Bowl. Could you imagine that? Seattle secondary versus New England receivers. Would New England Super receivers even want to board a plane?
I can guarantee you Dobson and Tompkins won't be playing.
They'd be deactivated for that game. So we both like Seattle and New England to play in the Super Bowl. Again, with these four teams, any matchup would be a great Super Bowl matchup in terms of storylines, offense.
We got the four best. That's great.
Yeah, got the four. So you will not get cheated. You won't have an Atlanta-Denver situation that we had back in the day when Minnesota just ruined all our dreams. Of a dream Super Bowl. So you don't have that situation. But we'll certainly talk about that on Monday. Mr. Sapp, thank you for joining me on the show.
Thank you very much, sir.
All right. See you soon.
All right.
That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. Again, preview show coming Monday. Those times will be announced. I like Denver. I like Seattle and New England to play in the Super Bowl, but we'll see what happens. Have a great weekend. So long.